So, welcome to today's SIPPY cast entitled Building Institutional Grant Capacity at Small and Rural Colleges. My name is Dr. Elizabeth Hawthorne, and I will be serving as today's SIPPY cast moderator. This SIPPY cast is being recorded for placement on the SIPPY STEM website where the other episodes already reside. We encourage you to go and watch those episodes if you haven't participated in one before. Okay, so toward the end of the presentation, we'll have a Q&A session where you can type your questions into the chat box. Ellen or I will read the questions aloud for our presenters to answer. So we ask that you hold all questions until then. Okay. Advance the slide. Looks like three people are in the waiting room. Okay. So welcome again. Today's speakers include Dr. Jennifer Wimbish, who is President Emeriti of the Dallas College System in Cedar Valley College in Texas. She's also part of our STEM project, and she serves as the Regional Network Chair of the Southwest Region. We're also excited to have Dr. Scott Also Brooks, who's President of East Mississippi Community College in Mississippi. And Dr. Alicia Carter, who is Dean of STEM Pathways at Hill College in Texas. And again, I'm serving as today's moderator. I serve as a co-principal investigator on the SIPPY STEM initiative. I also have the honor of being the principal investigator for a sister project called FORCE, Fortifying Cybersecurity and Computing Education through ATE Grants. And I spent many years in the classroom as a professor of computer science and cybersecurity at Union College in New Jersey. So today's topics, we're pleased to have Dr. Charlene Dukes, who is a co-PI on the project with us. She'll give us a brief overview in just a moment. We're going to briefly go over some research on small and rural colleges, show you a map, and then we'll have our discussion with our esteemed panelists. And it's really about the challenges and successes of building institutional grant capacity and a grant culture at small and rural colleges. And then we'll open it up for questions from the participants. So without further ado, Dr. Dukes.
Yes, good afternoon, and thank you so much, Dr. Hawthorne. I'm Charlene Dukes, President Emerita of Prince George's Community College in Maryland, and I'm absolutely proud and delighted to be a co-principal investigator on the Community College President's Initiative in STEM that we refer to as SIPPY STEM. And the reason for this grant for us is so imperative in this day and time. We want to galvanize community college leaders, presidents, provosts, vice presidents for academic affairs, senior leadership, deans, faculty members, as you begin to think about at your institutions how STEM grants through the National Science Foundation's Advanced Technological Education Program can really provide innovative and transformative work at your institutions. And so what you see here is a map. And this map is really designed to display the eight regional networks that we currently have that serve the United States of America and our US territories. So we have eight regional directors, or we call them regional chairs, and they each are either a current or former college president. And the string that ties all of them together is that they have been heavily involved in grant writing and grant acquisition at their various institutions and can speak very proudly about the transformative work that has occurred as a result of that. So we're looking forward to the dialogue and the discussion today. And even as we hear from our panelists, they'll talk about the opportunities they've had, the challenges that they've seen, and how they've been over to overcome those. And when we get to the question answer period, we certainly want you to talk to us about what are the things that could happen at your institutions that make you primed and ready to pursue grants or to continue to pursue the grants on top of what you already have. So we're again delighted to welcome you to this webinar on small and rural colleges. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, Dr. Hawthorne, to talk about some of the mentoring programs that currently exist as well to support institutions.
Thank you very much, Dr. Dukes. So the other part of the screen next to the map are the NSF ATE mentoring initiatives that are designed to help college teams consisting of faculty administrators to submit competitive grant proposals to the ATE program. You can see there are five currently active mentoring initiatives. I introduce myself as the principal investigator of FORCE. We also have Mentor Connect, Mentor Up, Pathways to Innovation, and Project Vision. Links to all of these mentoring initiatives are on our SIPI website under resources. And some of the panelists today may mention some of these mentoring initiatives and their experience with them. Okay. So before we open it up for the discussion, I did a little research on small and rural colleges, and two recent articles popped. One is called Shining a Light on Rural Colleges, and that was published in January 2022 by Inside Higher Education. Just a month before that, December 2021, there was research out of the University of Wisconsin-Madison that mapped the rural colleges and their communities. So I'm just going to take a quick moment to show you this map, right? So this data comes out of the U.S. Census Bureau. So you can see that we have a lot of rural community colleges across the nation. Okay, so now we're going to open it up for questions, since this is really the heart of today's SIPICast. So these are guiding questions for the panelists, and I'm going to start with Dean Carter. So can you please do these three things. Briefly describe your smaller rural college for background purposes, kind of set the stage for us. And has your college ever applied for any type of funding from the National Science Foundation, and in particular, NSF ATE funding? And then as an administrator, what do you see your role as in fostering a culture of grants at your college and encouraging faculty to participate in that process? Dr. Carter.
Hello, everybody. I hope y'all are having a great Friday afternoon. My name is Dr. Elisa Carter. I am the Dean of STEM at Hill College. Our college is a very small rural college in the center of the state of Texas. We serve 28 dual credit ISDs, which is independent school districts, for those of you not in Texas. So we have a huge dual credit enrollment, about a third of our enrollment supports those school districts, and they are very, very rural. We have a very high, low socioeconomic background to a lot of our students, and I can't get that number off the top of my head right this minute. But we are getting started in the process of the NSF grant funding, and we are the failed attempt from last year. We did begin the process. We started it to go through the FORCE ATE grant. And so we've applied for one where we were the secondary, and that what they call it. We were not the primary person on the group on the grant. And we did receive that funding, but that was over 10 years ago. So it has been a long time since we've been a part of this. We are in the process of trying to write a grant that is for automotive cybersecurity. We started the process and we ran into it. So I'm going to kind of answer two and three at the same time. We ran into a lot of problems at our college due to processes. And so we learned a lot of lessons with regards to how to strengthen the ties that across the campus and across the different siloed groups So we got them together on a bi-weekly meeting, and we pulled people from libraries, the advising departments, budgeting, our business offices. So we had quite a few people from various different groups across the campus that came together, and we got almost to the finish line, and then we hit a couple of roadblocks. But the biggest thing that we learned was that we did not have good enough structures in place as a college to make it through all the way to the end and submit. So because of some outside influences, we are now bringing in, we now have a external funding person. We now have, we are in the process of hiring a grant writer. So we have several things that are in, that are coming into place that's to help us with this. But as we're doing this, there's those of us that applied that were working on that first grant. We're still working on trying to apply for next year. So we already are that same group of core people. We are working together to, we're already trying to strengthen our research that we had found. We're still trying to have conversations. We're still trying to meet with the people that are in our community that we're serving. But fostering that as a senior administrator, fostering those, that culture, because we pulled so many people in, it became a, across our, we are on three separate campuses, and they're about 30 minutes apart, but we pulled people from all over those campuses. And it's very interesting, even though we didn't make it through, there are still conversations taking place. And so by us creating the group that we did, we have brought together some people that are very interested in not just the one grant, but if that grant doesn't go through, what else can we do? They've tried to figure out other ways to support the grant writing process. And so it has spurred, we now are in the process of three other grants that we're trying to work on. So it has created a culture of, this is something we can do. And we would never have gotten to this place if it had not been for the mentoring that we got through Force ATE and Mentor Connect. And we can't thank them enough. So that's all I have to say. Yes, pat yourself. You're right, Beth.
No. My heart. You're touching my heart. I'm patting my heart. I'm not patting my back. I'm patting my heart. Thank you for those kind words.
Yes.
I'm glad we helped you move forward, even if we didn't get you to the finish line this year. But we are, if you come back, we will commit to
getting
you to
the finish line next year. We have faith.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Thank you for that. And I understand if you have to attend to an emergency situation, but I really appreciate you being here and sharing your experience with everyone on the call today. There's about 36 of us, so I'm really excited. So now I'd like to pass the ball to President Also Brooks from East Mississippi Community College. And if you could just address these three questions on screen, that would be wonderful.
Sure, Dr. Hawthorne, thank you. And I want to thank everybody that's on here today. This is very good topics. And I'm excited about CCPI and being involved with this. I want to thank Dr. Massey and Charlene and others. But our East Mississippi Community College is a rural community college, about 3,500 students along the Eastern Central Corridor on the Mississippi-Alabama line. This area was once just really ag and forestry. And as mechanization led to the labor decline in those areas, it left a lot of people without jobs. There was some low-skilled manufacturing, and NAFTA killed those type manufacturing plants. So in the 80s and 90s, this area was just devastated. And they did a really good, this area came together with the university and economic development community and did a really good job going out and recruiting advanced manufacturers to come into this region. And really kind of a renaissance for this area, particularly the Golden Triangle, which is Columbus and Starkville and West Point, Mississippi, where Mississippi State University is, and where East Mississippi Community College's largest campus is. And our college developed quite a good reputation of taking people that were in highly manual, low-skilled jobs that were used to getting up and going to work every day in a manufacturing environment, and reskilling them and getting them into the advanced manufacturing world. So we've done a really good job of recruiting companies in like Airbus and Boeing and PACCAR engines and that. And so now the impetus is still to prepare people for those jobs, but even keep advancing the skill level. And that's where our attention to NSF comes in and ATE. We understand that in order to keep advancing the technology and offering better programs for our students to get into these jobs and survive as they change, survive that culture that we live in, this constant change, they got to have the right technical capability. And we can't do it without finding funding from places like NSF. And so we're very excited about being a part of this. And I'll tell you our story. Have we applied for and this just kind of tells you how delicate it is. And I know many of you walk these tightropes every day. Yes, we've applied for an NSF grant. We got involved with Project Vision and Kevin Cooper right before COVID, right before the pandemic. And we had a great experience. They do a really good job of mentoring. And we got a couple of faculty members and an administrator involved, and we're just wrote a great grant. But thankful for Kevin for helping. The pandemic hit. One of our faculty members involved in the administrator side of this both passed away with COVID. So we had to cancel. It's one of the things that the community college board, and I think y'all know this, the faculty member, he was our only guy that had the expertise. He was the one guy, you know, he's an IT guy, and he's the only one that taught cybersecurity for us and artificial intelligence and was into all that stuff. He was our only guy. So that we couldn't say, well, we'll go grab another faculty member out of this division. We didn't have another guy. And our administrator obviously was involved as well. And so we had to decline the grant. I know that's probably unheard of in NSF world. Nobody sends money back, so to speak. But we had to do that because of what's going on. So it kind of tells you the tightrope we walk and we think about applying for these grants and giving faculty members releases and helping them write grants. Well, sometimes you give a faculty member a release, you got to go find another faculty member. And that's tough in rural America. This is very difficult to find a cybersecurity guy. It took us several months to replace Brandon, who passed away. So it's a challenging environment. It's a challenge to be in our environment at rural community colleges, but we're not going to quit. That's for sure. We're going to keep working and we're back working with Kevin and Project Vision, and we're going to get involved with Mentor Links and those mentoring opportunities and continue to develop grants, because we know how critical it is. Our community needs us to do this. Our workforce development and our company's environment, the economic development community needs us to do this. We're going to keep charging along and finding a way to do that. And that helps me answer number three. As president of the college, it's my role to help these communities, the economic development community, the industrial community, the advanced manufacturing community, and help them fill that pipeline of workers. And this is the only way we can do it, by finding opportunities like NSF and getting grants that fit the need of our community. I don't think it's necessarily coming up with, you know, reinventing huge, you know, big technology. It's just finding a way to make the technology work for us in our area and putting it to work to fill that pipeline of workers for our company, so that we can sustain these really nice companies that we have, really high paying jobs, and hopefully, recruit more in, so we can continue to grow our community and offer really good jobs for our citizens in our six college district. So, Dr. Hawthorne, I hope I answered all three of the questions. I kind of ran through a story there to try to answer them, but I hope I answered it well.
You sure did. We like stories. People resonate with stories. So I believe President Windisch has joined, and I'd like to ask her to now tell her story about her experience with small and rural colleges in the confines of these three questions on the screen. We have more questions, but if you could address these three, we'd appreciate it.
First, I want to say thank you to everyone involved, and I'm happy to be here. Let me talk about when I was president of Cedar Valley College. If you can imagine, Cedar Valley College is a part of the large Dallas system now, the Dallas Community College, and it's surrounded by large systems. You have Fort Worth, You have Collin County. You have Austin, San Antonio, all those huge systems. And so I was fortunate when we were looking at NSF to be also a part of a community wanting to advance. So I've learned that everything is about relationships. So we worked with the school districts who were advancing STEM programs and wanting to be known for that, working with the community college as well as some of our historically Black colleges. And if you can imagine a community that doesn't have an identity. So we were in the position of saying, who can we bring in for jobs? That's a little bit different whack of it. So the thing that was so important panning in that environment was first to have a strategic plan that involved faculty. That's how we had faculty involved, support staff, people from the various industry, legislators, because we were talking about where do we want to go and how do we want to build. And so out of that relationship and that strategic plan, we defined some places to go. And so the role of the president is to make sure the direction, the vision, and where you're going is clear. Out of that, we worked it a little backwards maybe from others. And a question I've heard, the whole issue of then given that setting, what do you do? How do you grow an office? We did research. And so at that time, we weren't aware of Force, Mentor Up. We interviewed presidents, grants offices, administrators who had gotten an NSF. And they suggested out of that, that we develop partnerships with community colleges who had been successful. And so we found two, not even in our state, but because of relationships, they allowed faculty, grants folks to come and visit for a whole week. We sent a team that had all of the players to two different places. They shared their grants. Then that allowed us to see the vocabulary we needed. And so from that, we then pulled everybody together. We've always at Cedar Valley had a great team. One of the advantages is of being the smallest can be that you know that you have to have great teaching and learning because you have to keep your students. You can't afford to lose any of your students. You have to develop partnerships and then with your high schools, and the high schools were in the same position. We were all working to get developed and known, serving a large African-American population, looking at a growing Latino Hispanic population. So it was then relationships, us working together, all of the leaders, the president, the superintendents, if you can imagine, the superintendents of the school districts, a president of a historically Black college, a president of a community college, legislators saying, here's where we're going and let's work it. Out of that research, we found that there were some missing partners. I often say here in Dallas, we have large churches. And so a population that wasn't doing well in this area was African-American males. And so you've got your relationship, but then we said a relationship that is missing are our large churches, T.D. Jakes. People have heard of those large churches. We put them in, our wives, our various communities. And then we applied first for a planning grant, which allowed us to understand the language, the pieces, the different areas. And then from that, we wrote an NSF and were successful in getting that focused on STEM. It allowed us to then hire other people. But I want to emphasize, Beth, that it was about relationships on the campus. All of the people had to be on board. Relationships in the community. All of us were going the same way, relationships with people who had gotten an NSF who were willing to help. And so relationships became key as we all learned together.
Thank you, President Wimbish. We're going to move to the next slide with the next series of questions. And if Dean Carter is still on, because I know she's dealing with some things. Okay, Dean Carter. So the next set of questions, what challenges has your college experienced in building institutional grant capacity? Of the challenge you mentioned before, which one did you say is most difficult to overcome? And what are some of the reasons for that? And number three, what has your college done toward overcoming challenges to build institutional grant capacity and culture, whether it from the National Science Foundation or other federal or state funding agencies? And I think you spoke a little bit about this previously, but if you could expound on it, we appreciate it.
So I think our biggest challenge that we faced was, once again, procedural with inside our own college, that we didn't have good enough procedures to get the grant from the beginning phases through the approval chains of our college, which if you don't have those good processes in place, that matters. Those of you that have already had those in place, this is your old hat to you. Y'all have been doing this for a long time, and it's not, you may not remember those growing pains from way back when. But what has been important for us is being able to talk to people like Dr. Wimbish and Dr. Hawthorne, and being a part of those conversations to be able to find how we navigate the issues that we encountered. The one that was the most difficult one was explaining to our executive leadership team, which is our president and vice presidents, what we were trying to accomplish, and getting them to understand some of the science side of what we were trying to do. And that having those conversations was very difficult. But one of the things that we've been able to do with overcoming is being able to say to them and talk to them about the relationships that got built within the school, within the college, and then within the community, and specifically with some of the industries that support us. And these, and it, as we had those discussions, it has helped us to be able to further our communication, our relationships across divisions within the school, and externally to our community. So for every challenge that we encountered, we can see multiple positive things that came out of it as we moved forward through it. So I think that's the biggest thing, was just looking for all the positives for us. And that was how we've really overcome it. And, you know, here's these, and we've had lots of follow-up meetings that are about, where did we run into, what were our pain points, and how do we overcome them moving forward with other grants? So that was, I think, one of our biggest overcoming parts of it, was having those conversations. This caused a problem. How do we fix it moving the next time?
Great. Thank you very much. We'll go back to President Alsobrooks and then President Wimbish.
The challenges, I kind of mentioned some a minute ago. I think trying to get a technical faculty involved in grant writing, I don't, you know, sometimes that's just not their forte. They don't necessarily want to be research writers, grant writers. So you got to find that right technician that wants to get into grant writing. And I think some of them want to be involved in grant writing or the grant process and executing the grant, but as far as writing it, not so much. So we've employed, and we don't have a grant writer, so we've employed a third party to help us write some grants, a nationally known company that's kind of specializes in this. And we found them to be absolutely wonderful to work with. So we've got them helping us. And I think from an administrative point of view, it's probably more productive to pay somebody per grant when you're only applying for, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 a year than it is to have a grant writer on staff. So we're going to continue down this path, and we're working NSF. We're applying for a Department of Labor. I was at a DARPA meeting this morning. We're going to apply for a DARPA grant in partnership with the university. So we're going to use that third party to help us. But that's one of the challenges, you know, as far as having technical faculty that more, they want to be more hands-on, I think, than they do writing. But I think we can help them when they get become more involved in this. Some of them may rise up to the challenge of wanting to become a grant writer and develop their own proposals. We shall see. We will help them. I think that's where these mentorship programs that NSF has put together will help mid-level administrators and faculty members learn the process and what it takes to develop a grant. And so we're going to continue to work with those opportunities to help our faculty and our mid-level administrators to become better, to get more involved in the grant process, to learn more about it. And some, I think, will embrace it. And once, like I once did, I was once a PI many, many years ago, thanks to Liz Tellis. And I see her name on the board on the screen here. She's in here with us. I wasn't a very good grant writer, but I submitted a proposal to ATE back in 2006. And Liz kind of liked our ideas, but the writing was pretty bad. So she helped me recraft that proposal into a winning proposal. And we got a project at Pearl River Community College at the time. This really was, and still, it's a very transformational program that was put together that is still going strong at Pearl River Community College down in South Mississippi, thanks to Liz and NSF. So these grants can definitely be transformational to your institution and help put things in place that can be sustainable for many, many, many years down the road. If you think long-term, like Liz helped me to do, really put something in that can be transformational for your institution. And that's what we want to do. We don't want to just do a grant and when it's over, close the book and leave. We want to put something in place that's going to stand the test of time and benefit students and faculty for years to come. So that's our impetus on these grants, is put things in place. Use this funding as capital investment to put something in place that's going to be long lasting.
Thank you. President Windisch?
Let me say that both when I was at Cedar Valley and since I've retired, I've always been interested in interviewing individuals, and so have talked to a number of colleges about this whole issue of building capacity. And so when I was at Cedar Valley, we were doing two things at once. First, hiring individuals to provide leadership for grants, so mentoring and helping them grow. At the same time, building a grants office that's connected to research and connected to faculty and your college. And so that was a challenge. And here again, we had new individuals coming in, someone taking the lead, them being mentored by someone, but doing somewhat what Scott suggested. Then we found someone to write those first NSF grants. You know, you just don't write one and necessarily get it, but you look at what your point system is. And so we hired someone, one person in our case, to write and to provide leadership. And so it's sort of, I always say, climbing as you go, building as you go. And so we had someone that was working with the team, that was growing, that became great. We then had them understand what faculty to work with. I also can't say enough about the value of the English faculty. If you look at engaging faculty in their area of discipline, there are contributions English faculty could make. And so you've got your science faculty. Well, some of them come from a research background. So we were always looking at faculty in the discipline. We were always looking at the gaps. How do we connect across institutions and how can we grow? So I hear often colleges say, well, how do you go after a grant when you don't have a grants office? And I've heard over and over You're going to hire someone or hire a large company or small company. You're going to work with other institutions. And we did this. Sometimes we were working with someone else who had the experience to do what we needed to do. And we didn't stay necessarily inside of Texas. We learned to reach across. Certainly Texas and our community was our base. But when you are growing an industry that's coming to your area, one of the things I learned is they have programs in other cities. And so we learned to connect with those cities, those community colleges, and work it together. So it was a challenge. It wasn't so much a challenge in my institution to build this culture, because if you can understand a group of people who are going for excellence, who want to grow, a community that wants to grow, that wants to thrive, it was, how can we build capacity while we're bringing in the new and learning as we move forward? And so it was then working with others that allowed that to happen in a very excellent and quality way.
Thank you for those insights, President Wimbish. We're going to move on to our next set of questions and our last set of questions. And again, we'll start with Dean Carter. Here are the three guiding questions. Please describe some benefits your college has experienced from receiving any type of grant funding, and if you've had ATE funding, if you could speak to that in particularly. Two, has your college ever leveraged resources by participating or considered participating in a consortium grant with other community colleges? And I think President Wimbish was alluding to this in her previous answers. And any words of wisdom, encouragement, experience that you can share with our participants? I'm sure they're anxious to learn any tip that will help them.
So my first, with respect to the benefits of receiving the grant, so we did not receive this particular grant. We didn't make it to the finish line, but there were so many benefits that had to do with Dr. Osbrooks, you were talking about the technical people, and they got so excited about being a part of this. Brian Dimmitt, who's our automotive person, and Jackie Armstrong, who's our cybersecurity person, they became so excited about being a part of this grant process that now I'm almost going, please quit bringing me grants. I really don't have time for this many coming across my desk and trying to figure out what's the right ones to take forward to the president's committee. There are all these other faculty members began to see the benefits of being a part of it. And speaking to what Dr. Wimbish said about leveraging the resources of the group, and how she was talking about how, you know, you start seeing, well, if we get this particular grant, we can leverage that to and build off of it with this other piece of information or this other grant. You start seeing how they can, you can build that capacity for more and more options available for your students. Once again, the biggest thing with respect to the words of wisdom is reaching out to these people. The ones that have gone before, they are so welcoming and ready to help. And I don't care how stupid the question is. You know, we all say there's no such thing as stupid questions, but every once in a while, we've all taken deep breaths when people have asked certain questions. And these people were so good about asking so many of the little goofy questions that we had that were tiny details that we just didn't understand. We didn't know how to navigate. We didn't know how to even have the right, how to make the right question. We couldn't even verbalize our questions because we had so little background in what we were doing. And so our biggest wisdom, and I don't care how many grants you have, I think the biggest wisdom that we can share is, you need to reach out to these people and learn from them and take their tidbits of information and move forward with it and strengthen what you're doing even more so. And going across state lines is a really great idea. Yeah, because they have some ideas that we can mirror in the state of Texas. So
thank you very much, Dean Carter. Okay, President also Brooks, and then President Wimbitt.
Yeah, I think the benefits that I've seen and experienced, you know, when the last NSF grant that I had years ago when I was a PI, you know, we started with the end in mind. We wanted, and we really needed it. It was a great need. Hurricane Katrina had just devastated South Mississippi, and we built a lineman program. We developed the curriculum and bought equipment and everything to get a two-year lineman degree program up and going in 2006. And if you remember, Katrina hit in 2005. So there was a great need there, but the larger benefit for the broader community was the energy companies needed a pipeline of workers for rebuilding and maintaining the electrical infrastructure. And there's nothing that'll wake you up on the need when you have a catastrophe like that. And you got many, many thousands of power lines laying on the ground, miles of power line laying on the ground. So there was a great need, and the greater benefit was it's a good program for Pearl River, and it offers a great education for many students to get a one-year certificate or two-year degree and get a good job. But the bigger benefit, man, is it really helped those companies hire people that have some entry-level skills to hit the ground running and start, you know, to keep our power grid, not only maintain it, but build new power lines and replace those when catastrophes like hurricanes and such hit. So that's some of the larger benefit. We are part of a consortium in North Mississippi that was at East Mississippi that was part of when Toyota came into the area. There's a large Toyota plant in our region, and we put together a consortium of five community colleges to go out and pursue funding to develop a workforce for Toyota. And that's still functional, not to the level it was when the consortium was put together, because the plant's pretty mature now. And they've got filled the plant with workers, and now it's just replacing those that might leave. But consortiums are great. It's really good to put multiple colleges together and bring all these different ideas together and work for the common good of more than just your little college district, working for the region, which includes North Mississippi and North Alabama, and Eastern Central Alabama and Mississippi as well, to work towards, you know, putting together something that's going to benefit that whole region. And as far as words of wisdom, you know, I think we just don't want to give up. Just keep, you're not always, I've been turned down. I've written probably three or four other NSF grants that I haven't got funded, and that's just part of it. But you gotta keep trying. It's like playing baseball. You get up to the plate, you're gonna strike out. Some of them, you're gonna fly out and ground out. Every once in a while, you can get a nice hit. Sometimes you get a home run. So just keep going up to the plate and swinging the bat, and good things will happen eventually. Just keep trying. That's what we're gonna do, and that's been my motto my whole career. So we're gonna keep plugging away.
Thank you, President Also Brooks. That reminds me of Babe Ruth. What is Babe Ruth known for? Home runs, but he struck out more times than he had home runs. So keep going to the bat. Keep going to the plate. Dr. Wimbush.
Yes. First, let me say that I want to mention student services professionals. I came out of student services, but I also want to mention that the role that those who are committed to helping you keep students, because as we do these things, they are about producing a workforce. You have to have people who can be on the ground, who can listen to students and help them be successful. So I just want to say that also. But in terms of resources, when we were looking at things, we looked at it in terms of the community. So if you can imagine a group of science faculty putting together and working a STEM center of excellence, and being some of the first to have a 3D, I hadn't even heard of the 3D printer and this different technology, and then bringing your elementary, your junior high, your high school and college kids together. So that's a kind of a resource. Then the NSF grant I worked with, it allowed us to hire some faculty or grants can allow that to happen, which gives you more resources. And so it can, the only purpose, I don't want to say it's all about staffing, but it can enhance what you're doing with staffing. But it's important to work together. Here are my words of wisdom. I would say that first, we have to be lifelong learners. In this role, I've certainly learned a lot. And I think it's so important to listen and to learn and to, just as Scott said, to stay in the game, to make sure that you are, you know, I grew up in an environment, and this still works today, where the wisdom was every time you do something, go for excellence. And so we were told the story, if a doctor had 100 babies to deliver and they dropped 10, that's not good. And so we were always bringing people together to achieve excellence. And once you've done your best, you can say, well, this wasn't our time. We didn't get this one, but we are going to stay in it. And today it's also so important to focus on sustainability. And now who are we going to leave in place to carry on? I hear colleges talking about the great turnover. How can you build sustainability within your organization so that what you've learned continues? So my words of wisdom would be to listen, to share, to execute with excellence, but then to focus on sustainability and think about then how do I leave something in place where people learn from what we've done as they continue to climb.
Thank you, President Wimbish, and really like your sentiments about excellence. And if you look at the logo for SIPPI, it says Achieving Excellence in Workforce Education, right? So that's what this project is all about. Okay, so now we're going to wrap up. I know we're about 5 minutes over time, but everybody's been hanging on. It's been very engaging. So I just want to let you know that the presentation slides are on our SIPPI website at that link. The slides are out there now. The recording will take a week or so to get up there. There's previous episodes out there. You can look at the video and listen to the audio through a webcast. And we also just have a podcast, which is audio only. If you're driving, we don't want you to look at us. Just listen to us. Our next SIPPICast episode is a month from now, Friday, December 1st, again at same time, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Central, and it's Strengthening STEM Education at Minority-Serving Institutions through NSFATE Funding. You can RSVP from these slides when you get a copy of them, or there's a link right from our homepage. So we want to encourage you to come to our next SIPPICast. Okay, so now we're coming to any questions from the audience, comments. I'm also going to launch a poll. If you could take a few minutes to answer our poll, that really helps us to improve. So I believe Ellen's going to monitor the chat for any questions, or if you feel you want to just come off mute, I think we're a small enough group. You can just come off mute and ask your question or comment. And the poll is launched. If you could take a few moments to answer that while others are answering, asking questions or providing comments. Dr. Wimbish, do you have any more words of wisdom, some pearls, some jewels to share while working on the poll, since we don't have any questions?
Elizabeth, now you know it's dangerous to ask me that kind of question.
I know, but...
But sure, you know, it has been so wonderful having the opportunity to interview and talk to presidents. And one of the things I see today, I used to say that as leaders, the question was, how do you build relationships with 3 to 8 people? Now the question becomes, how do we develop relationships with 1,000 organizations? And so as we've been talking, you know, we talked about states, we talked about bringing together local groups, we've talked about learning. So how do we create this environment where there's ongoing learning. I've just been in Washington at the Library of Congress, and they have a segment about community. And so they issue the challenge to all of us. You know, they talk about how we used to build community, but now to think about building communities across any number of groups, all ethnicities, males and females, but to think about how do you do it online and in person with the technology for all people. Some people don't have, especially in a rural area, some of the, I call it hotspots, some of the technology they need. So how do we lead and build that as we move forward? So I'm just fresh thinking about NSF and building communities and learning and working across large, big, small, local, state, national. We didn't talk about international. So as leaders, how do we lead to do all of that?
Thank you very much. And it looks like we have some answers to our poll. So I'm going to close the poll with what we have answered so far. And then I will share the results. If you can see that. So we have, this is the first SippyCast that we have our open-ended questions. So it takes a little bit longer to answer those. So it looks like seven folks agreed or strongly agreed that we knew what we were talking about. And that's thanks to President Wimbush, also Brooks and Dean Carter. And they intend to share the resources they acquired here. Agree or strongly agree. And I would recommend this recording to a colleague. And again, I can learn from this webcast my professional role. So I will stop sharing. So we appreciate those comments. And I'll just one last call for any questions or comments. Just come off mute and just say your question or comment. We'd love to hear from you.
I would just like to share with all of the speakers, appreciation for participating today. It's a very complex issue, and to work with small colleges requires a lot of dedication, a lot of work, and you made it more clear to us and understand what they're up against. So maybe we can help them a little better. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I think that's a great spot to end. So again, thank you for everyone attending. We hope it was worth your while and you at least took one thing away that will help you and your colleagues. And I just wish everyone a happy weekend, and don't forget to turn back your clocks. We're falling back, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, take care, everybody.